When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, in her book, To Those Who Have Confused You to Be a Person, our first guest uses critical analysis to offer a uniquely deep and intimate look at what women experience during online abuse, as well as how they cope and make meaning out of violence. To tell us, the author, welcome Alia Dastagir.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I believe this started when you published a story for USA Today, is that correct?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I've done a few, several interviews at this point, and I feel like this, there's a real sort of focus, in part because of how I wrote the book, on an experience of abuse that I had in early 2022, where I became the target of an online mob. And that's sort of seen as, and was a very sort of extraordinary, outrageous, terrifying experience, and it certainly played a part in how the book eventually sort of came to fruition and sort of entered the world. But in many ways, I think that this project started not with a single story, but with experience of abuse. Right? It was a cumulative effect. It was an accumulation of experiences that I was having when I was a reporter at USA Today for about 10 years. But really, back in sort of 2016, 2017, when my abuse really started to ramp up. And I was experiencing, you know, I think I was trying very hard to sort of accommodate to what I felt like was a pretty strong sort of cultural mandate to ignore it. I think I was trying very hard to do that. But my body, my mind, I wasn't cooperating, right? I was having incredibly, strong reactions to what I was experiencing. I was having a lot of dissonance between my life, being with my kids, being with my family, being with my friends, being with my art, being with myself, and then having people, you know, sort of come into my life with these sorts of intrusions, violations, really. So yes, there was an experience with an online mob in 2022 that was, I would say, the most egregious, the most scary experience that I had with abuse. But my abuse was a steady drumbeat for many years, which eventually led me to take on this project because I wanted very much to sort of answer the question that I was having for myself. You know, why can't I ignore it? Why wasn't I able to ignore it? Why aren't women able to ignore it? And why shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually, because they say a lot. I've heard a lot of famous and well-known people say, well, you know, it's best that I don't look, or somebody looks for me at Twitter or whatever. But on the other hand, knowledge is power. And sometimes what you don't know, you imagine far worse.
That's such a, you know, you're the first person who's made that point, and I think it's such an interesting one. There's a part of the book where I talk a little bit about, the book uses a lot of sort of different disciplines to kind of come at this problem, and philosophy is one of the disciplines. And there's this sort of idea that these philosophers put forth in a paper where they were talking about oppression and emotion regulation, where they were talking about this idea of sort of attention deployment, and that, yes, like one way that we sort of cope with this is by redirecting our attention elsewhere. And absolutely, there are certainly cases where you may have to do that, right? When I was the target of a mob, usually when you're having sort of a large scale harassment experience, it's actually almost impossible to cope with it yourself or to sort of document exactly what's going on your own. You often do need other people, and I had other people sort of in my newsroom helping me with that. But you know, so sometimes definitely you need to look away. You need sort of help, right? A community to kind of help you manage these experiences. Sometimes you need to log off and look away because it becomes so corrosive to the other parts of your life, or maybe the other work, the more important work that you're trying to do. So you kind of have to look away. But to your point, like looking away also comes with its own costs, right? If you don't look at something, you can't understand it fully, right? Mm-hmm. Online misogyny has, you know, misogyny is not a problem that starts with the internet. It's a problem that has migrated there and morphed and changed. And it really does, I think, behoove us to understand what's happening in these spaces, how it connects to the violence that we're experiencing offline. And yes, I mean, if you turn away from everything, if you minimize it, if you act like it's not having enormous amounts of individual and cultural harm, then you sort of put yourself in a position where you do exactly what the culture is sort of claiming that you should do, right? Which is just make it your own problem to turn away from, to try to ignore, except the truth is that nobody is. These things are having enormous effects on our bodies, on our minds, on our work, on our lives, on our families, on our sense of self. And so, yeah, there's a real, sometimes you have to look away, and sometimes there's a real cost of looking away.
And do you think this hate, because it is this online hate, and I can never understand why someone would hate someone they didn't even know, but these trolls, do you think it's far worse for women than it is for men?
I think that the problem, I mean, the sort of, you know, the numbers bear out that the problem does, I think, disproportionately impact women. The abuse that women experience is different. It's textured differently. It has a different kind of effect. I mean, I think it's worth noting that, you know, anybody who has any kind of online life recognizes that online abuse is a problem that sort of spans the ideological and political spectrum, right? There's many reasons for this. Money, politics, outrage, right? You're outraged about something enough, right? You can sort of justify a lot of bad behavior. The sort of norms of behavior online really sort of make this kind of abuse possible. But there is something, you know, when you're talking about abuse that is being directed at women and sort of other marginalized people online, you're talking about abuse that very much mirrors the sort of silencing, the discrimination that is so familiar, right, to women and other like marginalized people offline. This doesn't feel different. It doesn't feel like a problem you want to cognitively contain, because this isn't the only place that you hear this language. When someone online is telling you that you should be raped, that they want to rape you, that they hope someone rapes your kids, you know, this is part of a culture in which most women, many women, I mean, the statistics report, right, have experienced something on that spectrum of sexual violence, right? People who are marginalized, queer people, trans people who are experiencing, you know, attacks on their identity, on their well-being, on their humanity, on their autonomy, on their dignity, and then come into these spaces and are also attacked, it doesn't feel like something you can ignore, you know? So I think that's part of it. I also think it's worth sort of saying that, you know, the abuse is one of the sort of defining features of the abuse when it's directed at women is that it isn't just that it's about what that woman said or did, right? That is the issue. It's that she dared to do that as a woman. It's that she said that thing as a woman. She did that thing as a woman. And so the attacks become much less about, you know, the story you wrote, right? It's not just, this was a bad story. I disagree with the arguments. Like, this is fundamentally, you know, wrong. It's get back in the kitchen. How dare you be in a newsroom? How dare you be a journalist? What does your husband think? So I think that online abuse is a problem for anybody really online. And this is, you know, but it didn't start, you know, it's also worth noting that this is a problem that really began with a certain kind of internet user, right? And it wasn't a woman, it wasn't women. But this abuse does disproportionately impact women and has an enormous silencing effect, and is really going to, if left unaddressed, further push women out of public and civic spaces.
Yeah, but you do get women abusing other women online, don't you?
Oh, sure, of course. There's actually a whole chapter about that. I mean, I think it's really important, and I'm so sorry. I'm under the weather, as you and your listeners.
Bless you.
Hear.
I can tell you're losing your voice.
I'm trying. Oh. I woke up and I couldn't say anything, but oh. I'm here and I'm grateful.
You're doing
and
well.
I'm going to get these last few points out. It was really important when, you know, because you used the word trolls earlier, and yeah, that's absolutely true, that trolls are part of the problem. But when we use, but there is something, we do a little bit of a disservice to the issue when we claim that it's just trolls, right? Like it's just a certain kind of internet user. They're just, you know, these disaffected young men, right, who want to create chaos online or, you know, want to laugh, right? You know, it was important to me when I was conceiving of the project and really sort of executing and trying to explain to the reader what is going on here, to say that it's sort of less about the identities of the individual perpetrators, people sort of perpetrating the abuse, and more about the ideas that they espouse, right? Ideas like sexism and racism, right? Ideologies of white supremacy and white male supremacy. These are the attitudes that sort of that justify this, you know, often justify a lot of this behavior, this sense of competition, these hierarchical sort of attitudes, and anybody, right, can sort of become susceptible to that and sort of internalize that. And that's why I think you also see online, yes, women abusing other women, people of color abusing other people of color, right? I interviewed a woman who lives with a disability, and she said one of the most painful experiences of online abuse came from people in her disability community who were just so outraged about a choice, a moral choice, what they perceived to be a wrong moral choice that she had made. So I think it's important to remember that it isn't just a certain kind of user, not just a troll, right? Not just maybe even a man, but that this behavior is so often linked to attitudes of hierarchy and power and competition and supremacy. And this is why you see the problem as pervasive as it is.
Yeah. But it is illegal, right, Alia? I mean, online abuse is illegal. And in your experience, have you had any help from the authorities?
Oh, well, actually, when you said that, there was a part of me that was like, oh, like, you know, that's actually like such a bold statement to make, because I think that, you know, in many cases, no. So I would say law enforcement has not, I think it's a bold statement because I think it feels so dissonant. You know, here, obviously, like, it feels so dissonant with what people sort of experience when they try to report, right? Which is so often they have no recourse. So when I was the target, when I was the target of a mob in 2022, I called law enforcement. That was the second time I had called them to my home. I had also called them, I think, the summer before that, when I was targeted by a hate group online. And it was such a strange experience because, no, there was no... there wasn't even a basic understanding, I think, of what was happening to me. As I tried to explain to the officers who came to my door, you know, what it was that I was experiencing, they really struggled to kind of get their head around it. And I think they also struggled to fully kind of understand why I was afraid. And I think that latter point might be really crucial as I'm sort of thinking out loud, right? It's like someone has to believe. It's like your fear can be gaslit to the point where nobody has to address it, right? I knew that I was in danger, or I felt like I was deeply in danger. My body was cycling through all of this, you know, these sort of physical, physiological reactions, fight or flight, you know, freeze. And these guys came to my doorstep, and I don't think they were ill-meaning, but they were just, they really struggled to understand what the threat was and why I was so afraid. Yes. And by the same token, the platforms too, I think, you know, we would report all of everything that was kind of coming in, we being myself and, you know, folks in my newsroom who were kind of helping me, and we would report what was coming in. And, you know, if you would get back like these, because you report things, each message on its own, right? And you'd get a message back that said, sorry, this hasn't violated our policy. Sorry, this hasn't violated our policy. Sorry. And it was to the most abusive things that I'd ever heard. You know, again, just people sort of wishing death upon me, sending me memes with, you know, the barrel of a gun sort of pointed at me. So, you know, I am not actually, I think that there are obviously also sort of legal differences sort of in terms of where you are and where I am. But I think that, like, even for the laws that do exist to sort of protect people in these cases, without education for the people who are supposed to enforce what rules and laws are even in place, right?
Yeah, well, hopefully your book will help educate people. It's called To Those Who Have Confused You to Be a Person, Words as Violence and Stories of Women's Resistance Online. We're selling it right now on our website, tre.radio. And if people want to find out more about you, Alia, do you have a website as well?
Yes, aliadostiger.com.
Great stuff. I'll let you go and get some water. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.